Welcome to Sideline Judgment. My name is Sergio.
My name is Tyler.
And today we'll begin with a very somber moment. I'd like to tell you a story. July 9th, 2016, Sergio is working at a summer theater job in Flat Rock, North Carolina. He does a performance of The Music Man. He comes home to his shared household, turns on ESPN, and sees breaking news. Dwayne Wade to sign with the Chicago Bulls. He proceeds to then put away everything that he has, take his clothes off, jump in the shower, and cries. You're laughing, but this is a true story, Tyler. I'm not even lying. And he cries. And he plays Baby Come Back. And he plays All By Myself. And his sports world is over. It's done.
Oh my gosh. I didn't know we were telling
this
story.
This is actually what happened. But you know what? I'm going to fast forward to Thursday, February 8th, 2018, when Dwayne Wade comes home. Sorry, I screamed. But damn. Wade is home. Oh. The almighty Dwayne Wade. My father has returned from a journey. It's like he's in the Odyssey. He went out to sea and now he's back learning and wiser.
Yeah, like after like 20 years.
Yeah, except it was like a year, season and a half, but whatever. But he's back.
Feels like longer.
And he's in one of the beautiful Vice jerseys that I don't have $120 to purchase. But if anyone wants to donate to that fund, I will most definitely buy it if I hit $120. But that is nowhere near what we're going to talk about today. I just had to mention and express my gratitude towards Dwayne Wade, the second greatest player in Miami Heat history, behind Udonis Haslem.
Yeah, Sergio explained to me.
Entirely
before we started recording. Oh, wow, Udonis Haslem was the greatest Miami Heat player of all time.
The greatest South Florida athlete of all time. No debate. Don't even try to start with any of this Don Shula, Dan Marino, Bob Greasy type stuff.
Pretty I don't sure want to hear Dan Marino is not from South Florida.
No, but he's a South Florida athlete, you know what I mean? Like, Dwayne Wade is not a South Florida. He's not from South Florida. He's from Chicago.
Fair.
But, you know, we've adopted
that. Udonis Haslem is from South Florida.
Udonis Haslem is UD. UD is the man. UD is the greatest Heat player of all time. The day he retires is the day that his jersey will be hanging in the rafters. But that's not what we're talking about today. As excited as we are, as crazy as the NBA trade deadline was, today, we are nostalgic because we miss college football.
Yeah, we do.
Therefore,
I miss a lot, actually.
We're going to... Yeah, Tyler...
That's what I listen to All By Myself and Baby Come Back to in the shower.
The end of the season.
His is Dwayne Wade, mine is college football.
Oh, my God.
But I go through this every February-ish. Mm-hmm. Especially, it's really bad in March.
Right.
The spring games don't really start till April.
Mm-hmm.
So...
But what we're going to do right now is we're going to go ahead and dive into National Signing Day. It was last Wednesday, February 7th.
Yes, it was.
That was all that was on my mind until Thursday's NBA trade deadline, by the way. But we're going to talk about National Signing Day. We're going to talk about it from a Florida Gators perspective because this is a primarily Florida Gators podcast. We're going to talk about the national landscape, kind of some stories that we found out. We're going to look at the SEC ranking, mm-hmm. See how they went out. And I want to start with... Alabama has the 7th best recruiting class, and honestly, that's a down year for them. In a year in which they win the national championship, the 7th ranked recruiting class in the country is a down year. How do we feel about that?
Well, I think honestly, it's just an adjustment period. They only took 19 guys, mm-hmm. so it's down compared to a lot of other people and a lot of other recruiting classes. But Alabama's, so this is interesting. Part of the reason I think this is the way it is, and we were going to touch on this at some point.
Right.
I think I'll probably just actually talk about it now.
Okay.
We're talking about how this was the first year with the early signing period
mm-hmm.
in December, which allowed students to, which allowed student athletes to get locked up early and sign early if they wanted to. Alabama has made a living poaching guys from other teams.
Yeah. They're very busy on signing
day. A lot of the top programs do this, but Alabama in particular poaches teams all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Not only were there not these players to be poached as much from other schools, because it was projected about 70% of athletes signed in the early signing period.
Mm-hmm.
So only about 30% were left unsigned. On top of that, they didn't really do a good job of flipping anybody. They lost a couple battles. Some of They lost two battles with the Florida Gators, actually.
Right.
They did manage to flip Patrick Surtain Jr. from LSU.
Son of Miami Dolphins cornerback legend Patrick Surtain and current head coach at American Heritage High School, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They were able...
Which did, I went to. Did you know that?
Yeah, I picked up, are you aware? I have picked up on that, believe it or not.
What? No way. Are you kidding me?
They also lost out to Princeton on a quarterback commit.
Princeton! They lost to Princeton in football! I saw that story on Twitter.
It's just going to be one of those, when that guy, whoever the kid's name is, I forgot by this point, but like, mm-hmm. when that guy is like senator one day, it's going to be one of those interesting facts they put up on the news.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, had a scholarship to go to Alabama, but chose to go to Princeton to play football instead.
When he's vying for whatever political party nomination that he chooses to go for.
Interesting, but I'm relating this all back to a general thing. Something that I noticed of general early signing period is that the early signing period helped smaller schools because they locked up most of their commitments early.
Right.
There
was no chance for example, and I'm going to use this just because it's something I know. There was no chance for an FAU commit to be poached up by Florida State or by USF, UCF, or Florida at the last minute and have a change of mind. They were able to put pen to paper in December and honestly just kind of prepare themselves for starting college in the summer and what they're doing. I'd like to also point out that, talking about that early signing period, Alabama only signed four players in that early signing period. So the majority of their class was still based off of their old model, which I wouldn't say old model, but it's their model of poaching players in the last week, the last day, basically, kind of thing.
A good example of how this has helped is that let's just take a look at Minnesota.
Okay.
The Minnesota Golden Gophers.
Mm-hmm.
They have the 37th national ranked recruiting class among the 24/7 Sports Composite with a Big Ten rank of 7. That's pretty good for Minnesota.
Considering 7th ranked in the Big Ten, and you're talking about a conference that has the University of Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, Penn State, Wisconsin. That's 5 schools right there.
Yeah, they're better.
Who else was ahead of them?
They're Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, Nebraska, Maryland, and Michigan State were all ahead of them. Maryland is also a team that, despite not having a lot of on-field success, did really well in the recruiting, because DJ Durkin is amazing.
He's a great recruiter. Nebraska has Scott Frost now, a great recruiter.
But like, the thing with Minnesota is that they got, I remember hearing about this, they locked up about most of their commitments early.
Mm-hmm.
So they have 3-4 stars coming.
Right.
They're recruiting SEC players.
Right.
They're recruiting Southeast players that would get poached them under a normal model.
Because
now these coaches, once they've convinced them to come there, they don't have to worry for the next 2 months if Alabama or Florida or Georgia is going to come and poach them.
Right.
So this helps a lot of the small schools, and it hurts the one percenters, which is interesting.
I sound like Bernie Sanders right now.
You know, okay. Let's
is the early signing day period the universal health care for everyone of college football? Is this what we're going for? Is this the free college of college football?
I mean, that's not a bad comparison.
No, I'm being serious.
I think it's making it easier for the smaller schools, the lower tier recruiting powers to catch up to the higher ranked recruiting powers. And again, this could all be for naught once Alabama adjusts their recruiting model and just gets all the 5 stars early.
Exactly, right away.
And we've only had one of these, so we don't know how this will affect long term.
Right,
but
very small sample size.
Yeah.
Now, I'd like to bring up also that I watched Coach Mullen's post signing day presser in the afternoon last Wednesday.
I did as well.
And he mentioned, and what I really enjoyed, is that he likes the early signing period because it gives him an opportunity to establish relationships with coaches. Now, I think what we're going to find in the coming years is a shift from the major recruiting talking point where it comes to the mainstream and we see coaches out there every single day recruiting from January, February, or December, January, up until signing day, to be more in the summer leading up to the regular season.
Well,
because when we're in the regular season, we're in the regular season. So it's more difficult for coaches to be out there on the trail. But if we see an enforced, we're going to see camps, summer camps, recruiting camps have more of importance. Our Florida's Friday Night Lights is going to be more critical every single summer. Not that it's not critical now, but because of that shift and because of students knowing, okay, hey, if I bust my behind and I get my grades up and I'm able to graduate in December, I can go ahead and go to my institution of choice, get a head start on my degree, and get involved with those players. Get seen by coaches in spring camp. Mm-hmm. Get reps. Get adjusted to the collegiate game.
Well, I've heard multiple reports that for multiple coaches, this isn't like a thing I can trace back. This is just what I've been hearing.
Right.
Is that the early signing period has allowed coaches to spend less time going to the high school basketball games, mm-hmm, for the players that they have, and they have to keep recruiting until February.
Football games, you mean?
No, like you know, like how Chad Morris kept going to Deshaun Watson's high school basketball games during basketball season to keep him recruited.
Oh, I see that.
Like,
yes,
they don't,
yes,
have to keep wooing these players that they've already recruited and they've,
right,
signed in the early signing period. And mm-hmm, that a lot of coaches have said that gives them 2 months ahead in recruiting for the future,
mm-hmm,
and they get to spend more time with their current team. So
I think
this does put an emphasis.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win for them. A lot of coaches, I think, like this. But it's one of those situations where this is going to further what is expected in, like, how you can recruit. This is going to, like what you were saying, it's going to further the timeline.
Right. It's going
to... Because you have more time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, okay. So I think I want to ask your opinion, because, mm-hmm, I know where I stand. Where do you stand on the early signing period? Do you like it? Are you in favor of it? Would you rather just go back to one signing period? Would you rather move all of the signing period only to that first one in the fall? How would you feel? What do you think?
I like it. I like it the way it is currently, because
with two signing periods.
With the two signing periods, I think I could do better for, like, the placement of the early signing period.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if it was before the season or, like, a different time. It's just at a very weird time.
It's like post regular season.
The bowl games are about to happen.
But yeah,
a lot of coaches will be doing bowl prep. But what really this comes down to is it good for the kids?
Mm-hmm.
Is it good for the student athletes?
That's the most important.
And letting that, for me personally, if this helps them, if it helps the players, if you know where you want to sign early and you just want to get it out of the way,
do that.
Do it. Yeah.
If you're not sure,
and they
take
don't,
some more time.
And then it's not necessarily just moving that time up. It's just allowing the two options. I think it's good. I think it's good for that. And I also think it helps the lower level teams with their recruiting. So I think it's good for the sport.
I agree. I think it's good for the sport and for college football as a whole. I'm also a big fan of having teams, letting us focus on our exact teams. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm, focusing on the football on the field rather than the noise off the field. And I also think it's great for not only students but institutions as well. Let's go ahead and transition to the Florida Gators 2018 class. And one of the big things, I think we benefited from this early recruiting more than a lot of other schools, because we got our quarterback in the,
yes,
early signing period. We went out, we recruited, and we flipped Emory Jones, who at one point was an Ohio State commit.
Mm-hmm.
Out of Florida State
and Alabama both wanted him.
Exactly, out of Franklin, Georgia. And he ended up not only committing to us, but signing with us back in December. And he's currently enrolled right now at the university getting reps and stuff. We signed some pretty good... We had four of our four stars. We had Damian Pierce, a running back out of Georgia, who looks to me, he is giving me Malik Davis deja vu, my man. He can move.
I'm just a little worried about Damian Pierce because So his whole thing, he broke a lot of records.
Yes.
In Georgia, that is because his high school rode him.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the only thing you have to worry about that is, like, what's the toll on his body?
Mm-hmm.
But given how now with our two running back commits and how many running backs we still have on the roster.
Yeah, because we're returning Malik Davis. We're returning.
Ardarius Lemons. Jordan Scarlett is
coming
back.
Jordan Scarlett's
coming back. And we've got these two commits.
It's healthy. It's a healthy.
They're going to be.
I wouldn't be surprised if one or both of these freshman running backs redshirted, because we're so deep.
I would reserve. Because you just don't redshirt running backs is the thing.
I get it.
Yeah,
I just think
they'll probably play on special teams is the thing.
That's true.
I wouldn't be so totally surprised. It's just that you barely ever see running backs get redshirted.
Yeah. Right. I agree.
But how many four stars were there again? I'm gonna check. I should know this.
How many four stars? We have
12 four stars.
Yeah, 12
and 7 stars. 3 stars. So
and let me ask
over
you
50%
is that
blue
counting,
chip percentage.
Is that counting our transfers?
No, the transfers are not counted in.
Okay, because I'd like to talk about our two transfers.
Okay.
I'm not finding him here, though.
Well, they're not. They're not count. They don't count towards the recruiting class. Okay. So they count towards like how Will Grier never didn't show up for West Virginia's recruiting class when they had when he transferred.
Ah, okay.
There you go. Weekly Will Grier reference.
Okay. I did it this week. Nice. Very happy.
But yeah. So we had two transfers in the offseason. Trayvon Grimes, transfer from Ohio State.
Yeah,
he went to school with Jake Allen and St. Thomas Aquinas.
Yes, he did. And actually, he was a five-star. During that recruiting class, Jake Allen was constantly trying to get him to sign with Florida regardless. I'd like to preface that the reason he is transferring is he is having some family health troubles, some health troubles in his family, so he'd like to be closer to home. So we wish nothing but the best for his family members in that sense.
Of course.
We
also have Van Jefferson. A wide receiver transfer from Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm.
Ole Miss has crazy wide receiver depth. So, yeah. Like, the fact that he was the slot wide receiver, he's really good.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that you have to deal with all of these is that both of the... It has not been declared whether either of these two... wide receivers are going to be eligible immediately for 2018.
Mm-hmm.
They both have grounds in their appeal... Because Trayvon Grimes has his family issues, so you have to see if the NCAA is going to approve those.
Right.
As a reason for immediate eligibility. And Van Jefferson is coming from Ole Miss,
mm-hmm.
where he is appealing in the fact that he was deceived by the Ole Miss coaching staff.
Yeah.
And therefore, if the player is led to believe, in cases like this where the coaches get fired and there's all this scandal and everything,
mm-hmm.
Words not coming to my mouth. blah, 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 blah. If the player is led to believe something that is not true,
mm-hmm.
Then the NCAA often will grant immediate eligibility going forward.
Right.
So it's possible that both could play. It's possible that both could play next year. It's also possible that neither could play next year.
Right. And we won't know. We won't know until a bit later on.
I really want.
I want to go ahead. I want to talk about this class overall, though.
Okay.
The standout is going to be Emory Jones because
of course
we found our quarterback. He's 6'2" and a half, 195, and most importantly, he's a dual threat quarterback who I am drooling over watching him run Dan Mullen's perfected option type of offense. If we're looking at signing day news, we have Jacob Copeland out of Pensacola, Florida. A wide receiver, 6 foot, 192, who at one point was a Florida commit, with the coaching change, decided to decommit and then reopen his commitment, and then Dan Mullen worked his magic and he brought him back in and he signed on signing day. This is, if you are a Twitter watcher, this is the young man whose mother walked out the moment that he chose Florida over Alabama and Tennessee.
She was wearing an Alabama sweater and a weird, like, Tennessee hat.
Yeah,
checkerboard. So, don't know what that's about.
Those
two schools hate each other.
I also saw afterwards that she did come back and she did hug her kid. Yes. But very proud of Jacob for making the decision for himself. And
yes.
Whether other people and your closest people might not like it, they do love you and they'll be able to support you as we can see.
A lot of people... have to come to realize that when you really think about it, this is the last chance. Often players, if all goes right, this will be the last chance players get to truly pick where they want to go play football,
yeah.
what team they want to play football for, until their second NFL contract.
Wow.
Because a lot of time you play for the school that you choose, and mm-hmm. even if you decide to transfer, the school can block the schools you want to transfer to early. Some mm-hmm. schools may not want you that wanted you before. Some mm-hmm. schools may not be eligible to have you. And then when you get drafted, you don't get to choose.
Right.
So for a lot of players, this is the last time they get to choose. For a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Up to 8-ish years. And in that regard...
If they play football that long.
If they even make it that far. And
right.
So I think that this day really should be about the players. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm proud of him for doing what he thought was right.
Yeah. Another, player that I'd like to highlight would be Kyle Pitts. He is a 4-star tight end coming out of Pennsylvania. 6'5" and a half, 235. And I feel like he's very important simply because I feel like one of McElwain's big things that he was trying to emphasize was the importance of using the tight end. And then he went out and recruited tight ends, and then he just didn't use his tight ends. But that's another story. DeAndre Goolsbee's graduating. Siante Lewis is going to be a redshirt senior.
Yep.
And then Morrell Stevens and Khalif Jackson just haven't been.
There's also Kamara Gamble, but he could not stay healthy.
Exactly.
So we really don't know what we have at the tight end position except for Siante Lewis, who still has question marks about just his ability.
Yeah, exactly.
And the tight end role, I do know because I have been watching a lot of Mississippi State film lately because I've been trying, just one, they're fun to watch, and two, I'm trying to get a preview of what we're going to do in offense.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. In a good way. It's a very creative, fun offense.
Okay.
I'm salivating over.
Which is, honestly, it's what us as the Gator University of Florida community wants, you know?
Yes.
We want to win. The thing is, we were spoiled with Spurrier for so long that we're like, all right, cool. We want more of this with other coaches that come in. So it's very nice to see Dan Mullen come in and embrace that mentality.
Yeah.
Already becoming one of my favorite Gator people
correct
ever. Just from that speech that he gave at the basketball game, the Baylor game that we were at.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
But you can go back a few episodes. It's the short 10-15 minute episode that we did.
Episode 18.
18? Well, look at you.
I know the numbers of the episodes.
For the record, Tyler's the one that edits them up, and then I post them and put together the titles.
If you have issues with editing, you can complain to me.
If you have issues with titles, you can complain to both of us because I run every title through Tyler before we publish them. But that is, you know what, Tyler Renfro, we're going to say hi to you. We're recording our podcast. I hope you're listening. I hope you enjoy us. Man, trying to distract us from what we're doing.
Our friend just walked by the window where we're recording.
Yeah, that's for you, Tyler Renfro. All right, more players that I want to highlight, not just because he's from American Heritage Plantation, my alma mater, but Andrew Chatfield, 6'2", 221, an outside defensive end that is, I was going to say Byron Coward, that is Dante Fowler-esque, in my opinion. It reminds me of him on how fast he comes off of the line, on how impactful that he is. I like him. I think he's very good. I think it's more, he can learn under CC for a year. CC can go off, go to the league, make your money.
He's a nice compliment to Malik Langham.
Yes.
Another four-star prospect who is a strong side defensive end.
Yes. How'd you know I was going to transition to him?
Because, well, they play the same position. Both play a kind of a defensive end / outside linebacker role.
Mm-hmm.
Very good compliments, especially since they both have kind of expertise on different sides of the line.
Right.
But the big thing for me is that both of them were big gets from other schools.
Yes.
Malik Langham, Alabama and Auburn were going after him hard. He's from Huntsville, Alabama. So Gators have recently made they've been able to get a couple people out of Alabama. Michael Pirine, Darius Tony, now Malik Langham. But both these look like good pass, like really great pass rushers.
Right.
And they feel like they can fit Todd Grantham's 3-4 defense pretty well.
Two more that I want to kind of emphasize. David Reese, 6'2 and a half, 213 linebacker out of Vero Beach, another four-star.
Thought he was already on the roster.
Yeah, I get it. I know. I'm just saying I like the fact that we're addressing our linebacker depth.
Oh, yeah,
because
of course.
That was a problem last year when we had injuries and suspensions. And it's very nice to see that we're addressing that with at least one more. I think there's two linebackers in this class. No, there's one linebacker in this class. And then Evan McPherson, with the departure of my fellow Hispanic.
Okay,
I'm just going to say that.
Right.
My fellow Hispanic, Eddie El Adobo Piñero. We would, every time Eddie would make a field goal or an extra point at the game, I would look at Tyler and say, it's the adobo. It's what we put on chicken, bro. It's the adobo, I'm telling you. So, with the departure of Eddie going to the NFL draft, best of luck to you, Eddie. Evan McPherson comes in, three-star. He's a kicker. But to be a three-star kicker,
he's the number one kicker in the country.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty big deal. You know, he's from Fort Payne, Alabama, another player we took from Alabama, and was committed to Mississippi State, and was one of the first players to flip to Florida after Dan Mullen took the job.
Is Evan gonna roll off the tongue the same way? Do you think? Like Evan.
First of all, I'm insulted that anyone would think that. That a name like Evan will roll off the tongue like Eddie Piñero.
We didn't say his last name.
Oh, no, but you don't, but I do.
You said Eddie Pinedo.
Here's what I'll do. Instead of Evan.
Get out of here.
Evan doesn't get the adobo, but maybe Evan can get the black pepper.
That's a good one.
Some salt and pepper. A nice salt and pepper. Everyone loves salt and pepper on their food.
Yeah, but he's gonna be here for like at least like 4 years.
Oh yeah, so no, he's definitely staying.
It's good that they've addressed the kicker position.
Yes, and addressed the kicker position with the best possible choice, the number one kicker in the country.
Kicking is a weird thing because it's such like a, it's kind of like the offensive line. Like you don't talk about it when you have a good one. Nobody talks about the offensive line until they get a holding call.
Yeah.
Nobody talks about the kicker until they miss it.
There's not many people, Tyler and I aside, I will say we are guilty of that, who go, "What a block from the offensive line." Not like a downfield
I do that all the
time. No, we both do that. We've done that at the game together. We've watched other games and said that.
But a lot of people don't pay attention to the line of scrimmage. A lot of people, kickers are so often taken for granted.
Yeah.
So it's good to address those problems early.
Just ask Nick Saban.
Nick Saban just can't get good kickers. It's not like he doesn't address the kicker.
I know. Okay, the one thing, you told me something before we started recording that I want you to kind of say about what you think we're lacking in this class.
We don't have a corner.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have a single cornerback commit. And part of the reason is that we really thought that we were going to get 4-star cornerback Noah Boykin. Mm-hmm. We thought it was down to Florida and Virginia. Turns out he went to Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
Can't argue with that. It's a really good school.
I can. I don't like Notre Dame.
I have a thing against Notre Dame. So, like, anyway, my another school with a high recruiting profile. It's not like we lost him to Virginia, but that was a bit of a surprise. We really thought we were going to get him. We have Trey Dean is a safety in this class, hard hitting safety. He could play corner. I think he has the ability to play corner. I don't think he will.
Mm-hmm.
Justin Watkins, one of our wide receivers, a top 100 player nationally. He's kind of an athlete role. He can, and Dan Mullen talked about this, he likes players that are more athletes than they are positions.
Right.
Because he can do whatever he wants with them. He could play corner. He's probably going to be on offense. We don't have a true cornerback in this class.
Mm-hmm. We got a lot of safeties.
And I know you're probably like, well, why do we need corners? Because we have two true sophomore corners that are studs.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a bunch of other freshmen that we could play. But it's concerning when you don't get at least one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's concerning in the fact that they need to commit they need to get several corners next year.
Yeah.
They need to commit to recruiting cornerbacks.
That's going
to
be one of the top priorities, simply because we are a school that turns around corners a lot. We produce corners for the league. They don't call us DBU for nothing. Like our cornerbacks are here for 3 years. They start their true freshman year. They have outstanding sophomore seasons, and then their junior year they kind of coast and they cruise to being a first round draft pick. That's what we do. That's what we try to do here. I agree with you on that. One player that you're most excited for in this entire class.
It's a tie between I'm not gonna be weird and do a tie.
Yeah.
Since you gave, you're not allowed to say the same person as me, Emory Jones.
Oh, no, wait, what? No. Okay, fine.
All right, yeah, you pick somebody else. Emory Jones, just because I'm actually extremely excited to see what it's like for what this offseason entails for Felipe Franks and how Felipe Franks fits into the system, because I don't know if Emory Jones is ready.
Right.
But to me, he is the one with the biggest question mark as to immediate playing time.
Mm-hmm.
I could see him starting day one. I could see him not playing this year.
Right.
I don't know what his level is. I'm so interested to see what it's like for Dan Mullen to get a quarterback that he recruited, that's built for his system, which Emory Jones is built for his system.
Right.
You can go, and I'll give an extra one if.
I'm going to go with Jacob Copeland, since you took Emory Jones. I'm going to go with Jacob Copeland. Simply because of our lack of wide receiver depth, and he is one of the top prospects, I can see him getting being the second wide receiver behind Tyree Cleveland. Callaway's gone. Also, wild card, Trevon Grimes, if he's able to play.
And Van Jefferson.
Because I feel like both of those, and Van Jefferson, both of those transfer wide receivers can make an immediate impact. I feel like the impact that Copeland has is dependent on the impact that our two transfers might have. You know what I mean? If they're able to play or how much they have.
Well, he's getting playing time.
I think so, but it's a matter of it's a matter of how much is he going to have. Will he be cleared right away?
Yeah. Another player that I'm interested in is Justin Watkins, kind of the athlete I talked about earlier, top 100 player. Mm-hmm. He's kind of, when you watch his tape, he's kind of more of a, Jacob Coatland is like a legitimate downfield passing threat.
Yeah, he reminds he reminds me of like a high school version of Julio Jones, where like throw the ball up to him and he'll go get it.
Yeah. I mean, he also will do, they also give him handoffs and like, and bubble screens and everything, but he is a downfield passer. That Justin Watkins is kind of more of the bubble screen guy. Mm-hmm. Justin Watkins is only 5'11". He's a burner, but they'll give it to him out of the backfield.
You think we found our next Brandon Powell?
I mean, I guess. I thought we already had that. I thought it was Kadarius Toney.
Listen, Kadarius. You're right. I'm glad you took that back
because I was about to say, some Kadarius Toney slander on the podcast?
No. There will be no Kadarius Toney slander in my presence.
No, sir.
Especially not for myself.
But Justin Watkins could be interesting as well because he's much more of a burner and a shifty guy.
Okay.
I'm just really excited for all these. It's not even just the recruits because now we also like Dre Massey and Kadarius Toney and Tyree Cleveland, all these players that we had. And we kind of know about them, but we never really used them because Jim McElwain never really used them well.
Right.
Never really put them in positions to succeed. So I'm just extremely interested to see what these recruits added to the offense.
Mm-hmm. And how the offense could be able to click under a system that can work and we don't run play action on 3rd and 47. Mm-hmm. I think we
aren't in 3rd and 47. Is
that exactly? That's another thing, yeah. I think that's it for the Gators. Anything else you want to say?
I'll just say that I was disappointed in a couple of the, we lost a couple of high profile recruiting
battles.
Yeah,
we did.
We lost out on Nicholas Petit Ferrer to Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
We lost out on, previously mentioned, Noah Boykin to, Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
We lost a player to Nebraska, but we kind of saw that coming. Caleb Johnson, Caleb Tanner both went to, I think, Nebraska and Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, they were both leans towards there anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't, other than the Noah Boykin one, every single recruit that we didn't land on National Signing Day, I was not surprised by. Other than the Noah Boykin one that I really thought we were going to get him. Other than that, I wasn't surprised because it just didn't feel like they were coming anyway. So I didn't get my hopes up. And we flipped a couple guys that I didn't think we were going to get. When you say, oh, we're going up against Alabama for this recruit that lives in Alabama. Sorry, Alabama and Auburn in Malik Langham.
Yeah, I wouldn't think
so. I was like, oh, no, we're not getting him. No. And then we did. So I'm happy with the recruiting class, especially for a transition year.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very good transition class.
I agree. And to be noted, we didn't take as many players as other schools.
Yes.
We did not take many players.
We took 19.
So there's some room for next year's class and the class after that, and it's funny because Mullen kind of hinted at that in his press conference on National Signing Day.
Yeah, he talked about how like he's not just going to give roster spots away just to fill up a class.
Exactly. Yeah. No.
Which is smart. I don't think
I respect that.
I personally think that was Jim McElwain's problem.
Yeah.
Is that if he couldn't get the big time guys, which often he didn't, he would just give it to 3 stars. Another interesting stat real quick, this is kind of as we move out of Florida.
Okay.
If you go back and look at the groups of people that were committed under the players that were committed under McElwain and had decommitted and joined other schools, most of them went to lower tier programs.
Hmm.
Some of them went to, and others went to transition classes, such as Nebraska. One, Jamar Chase went to LSU, but that doesn't surprise me at all because he's a LSU, it's a wide receiver from the state of Louisiana, somehow fooled into going to an offense that can't pass.
I don't understand that.
Granted, that's us too, but...
But we could pass at one point in our history.
Yeah, that's also true.
Yeah.
But it was interesting when you go back and look at the players, most of them went to lower level of program.
Mm-hmm.
There were not players that once they decommitted from us really moved up to higher programs.
Right.
So it's interesting as to what other teams are evaluating as their talent.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of shows maybe why there were recruiting issues for Florida.
Right. Well, very well put. I hope that's the last time we talk about Jim McElwain.
It won't be.
I know, I'm just hoping.
Did you hear he might get a job in Michigan?
Wide receivers coach. I did hear that.
Head coach of the University of Florida.
Wide receiver coach.
Next job, wide receivers coach at Michigan. He's going to ruin their wide receivers.
Yeah.
Michigan's wide receivers are really good. They're all freshmen. Well, they're all sophomores now, but they're all really good. He's going to ruin them.
Oh, man. Oh, my God. All right. So,
you want to talk about national?
Let's go national. Let's go national.
You want to go just from the top down?
I would like to file a formal complaint against the University of Georgia for bullying against the rest of the NCAA with 7 5-stars. I'd also like to addend and put attached to that lawsuit and formal complaint the Ohio – I'm not even going to say the – just Ohio State University for of their 26 players – 20 of them are 4-stars. 20 4-stars.
Yeah. Of their 26, 23 of them are blue chippers. So 3 5-stars, 24 stars. That's insane.
Ridiculous.
You want another insane stat?
Give me another insane stat.
Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
Clemson's recruiting class at number 6.
Okay.
Which I'm just going to list out the top 10 real quick for the
Let's go ahead.
Georgia had the number 1 class in the nation. Then it goes Ohio State at 2. Texas at 3.
Boo.
Which is... That okay.
Sorry,
it was very, very good recruiting class.
No, yeah, they did. Even though their Twitter account shut down the day before signing day.
Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah,
They still had one of the greatest defensive back classes.
And their facilities are. I mean, I can understand why these top level players were going to Texas.
Yeah.
The history, it's coming back.
It's the bump year. It's what we always call the bump year in recruiting. Mm-hmm. It's not your first class. It's your second class.
Mm-hmm.
Because your first class is your transition class. Those generally aren't very good.
Right.
Because you just don't have the time. But the bump classes, it doesn't really matter what happened the year before.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've only got a year against you.
Right.
Players can ignore that. It's like, oh, it's just the first year.
Right.
You don't really have anything that they can put, like, you can put up against you. And you can just sell good things about your program.
Mm-hmm.
So Texas is really doing that well. USC is number 4. They had a fantastic signing day.
Yes.
They got 4 5-stars.
Yeah.
Penn State is number 5. Really good for Penn State.
Mm-hmm. Clemson really good period. That's just not going to say Penn State. Really good period.
Clemson is ranked number 6th. Alabama 7th. Miami 8th. Oklahoma 9th. And Notre Dame 10th.
Honorable mention, Florida State at 11. And then Florida coming in at 14.
Yeah. Auburn is at 12. Washington is at 13. Really good for Washington, too. They don't usually recruit at that level.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You want to hear another insane stat?
More stats.
Clemson's recruiting class. The number, I just said it, the number
six.
6th ranked recruiting class in the entire nation, only took 17 commitments and has the 6th ranked recruiting class.
That's really good.
They have the, Clemson's recruiting class has the number 1 overall player from 5 different states. Florida, Georgia, Ohio, South Carolina, and Alabama. They have the number 1 ranked player from 5 of those states.
Wow.
That's insane to me.
That's productive is what that is.
That's... I mean, Clemson doesn't have a lot of quantity in their class, but they got some quality. Just looking over this top 10, very impressed with Texas and USC.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I still think... I think USC's not going to fall apart after Sam Darnold leaves.
Neither do I.
I mean, they might not win the Pac-12 again. They might not have, like, an 11-win season.
Right.
But I don't think they're going to fall apart.
And there's an argument to say of, like, how much... Darnold impacts, you know, on how much Darnold's going to impact in the NFL or whatever, but you can't deny that he was clearly running that program in terms of the offensive.
Yeah. Well, they got a really good freshman quarterback coming in, JT Daniels.
Yeah.
So he'll probably start. Other school, Miami's doing really well.
Very well.
Oklahoma with the number 9th ranked recruiting class.
Yeah.
That's really good for them.
They took 22 players, about half, 12 of them are 4-stars. They did take a couple lower stars. I'm very interested just to see how moving forward how they replace Baker.
Mm-hmm.
They still have a good offensive line. They're going to lose one of their really good offensive linemen whose name I forget.
Orlando Brown.
Brown and this one with like a longer last name. Regardless, they're going to lose some quality players. But I'm just very interested to see how they integrate it and how the new quarterback under center.
Yeah.
And the huddle takes charge of that team.
Yeah, Oklahoma, I believe, before the season, Oklahoma ranked, averaged for the last 5 years, about the 15th ranked recruiting class.
Mm-hmm.
So this is getting better. I like what I see from the Big 12. We'll kind of go over this.
Yeah.
But I like they're improving their recruiting stock, especially with Texas at 3.
Yeah. It's good for the Big 12 that Texas, a perennial football school, is back in the top 10, top 5 in recruiting. It shows that there's hope that they're coming back.
Mm-hmm. So moving on, we'll go quick. We're going to 11 through 20. We'll just go quick over. Florida State at 11. Auburn at 12, Washington at 13, Florida at 14, LSU at 15, who had a miserable signing day.
Very bad.
Oregon at 16, Texas A&M at 17, UCLA 18, South Carolina 19, and Tennessee 20.
Now, I want to point out a couple things here. Tennessee dropping considerably. They had like a top 10 class in the past 3 years, I think. Mm-hmm. Dropping, not even out of the top, but out of the top 15, down to 20. And I'd like to point out that the University of Florida has officially out-recruited Jimbo Fisher.
Oh, yeah, finally.
It happened.
Finally happened.
A&M coming in at 17. 23 players, 13 4-stars, 10 3-stars. I also want to point out Florida State kind of keeping together that recruiting class intact for the most part. They had a lot of decommits, but keeping kind of the core of that class together. Anything else? Anything else you want to say about these guys?
To me, it's just kind of. I like that UCLA is up here. Chip Kelly's doing work.
Yeah.
South Carolina up here at 19. That's kind of.
Well, Muschamp can recruit. We know that.
Yeah. And
Muschamp's going to get you those players.
He's going to get some players.
Mm-hmm.
LSU, to go back on it, LSU had a miserable signing day.
Yeah.
They got a lot of their commitments flipped, including Patrick Surtain Jr. Because he was the headliner.
A
five-star cornerback, probably leaning. The most polished one in the class.
He was leaning towards LSU and then ended up signing with Alabama.
And you know, did you hear what he said?
No, I didn't hear what he said. I just got
they asked why Alabama, and he said because they win championships.
He's not wrong.
I mean, he's not wrong. Well, yeah, he's not wrong, but he's also like ultimate LSU troll.
100%.
Moving on. We'll just do top 30.
Yeah, we'll go to 30.
21 Michigan, 22 Nebraska.
Very happy with that. I'll talk about that in a minute.
23 North Carolina, very surprising to me.
Yeah.
Because they had like a season from hell.
And they're a basketball school.
Yeah. Virginia Tech, 24.
Mm-hmm.
TCU, 25. NC State, 26.
I applaud that one, especially after the season they had. I applaud that one.
Yeah. Mississippi State, 27. Maryland, 28. Mm-hmm. Louisville, 29. And Baylor, 30.
Now, Baylor cracking the top 30 to me is big. Because not only have they had the scandals, but they also had that horrible season last year.
1-11.
At least
they can beat Kansas.
At least they can beat Kansas. I was really thinking, in basketball apparently too. they beat them Saturday. I was thinking they were going to be in the 35 to 45 range. Maybe that was a little arrogant of me, thinking of a horrible year. The scandals, but like I just don't understand how, as a player, and not to criticize the 22 young men who signed for Baylor, but I just don't understand the mentality and the thinking. Unless this is like your real only offer and like your shot to play college football, why you would choose an institution that is ripe with scandal, that from the top down is tainted, as we've seen. You know, I don't understand it. Then again, I've never been a collegiate athlete, so I don't really have.
Well, I do know that, I think two of the aspects are, those people that were in power for all those scandals, pretty much all of them are out of power
right.
at the school now. And Matt Rhule has been selling a philosophy of just caring for other people.
Mm-hmm.
He said when he took the Baylor job, when he came from Temple, that he felt like he was called to go fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was what was there for him to do.
Right.
He had to go fix the Baylor institution. And honestly, the other thing, playing time.
Playing time. No, you're right.
Like,
and
really,
playing time,
really
and playing time in a Power 5 conference.
Texas high school football is weird. They have really all the Big 12 schools play to the athletes that live in Texas and their high schools, and there's just a lot of players have fits in the Big 12 schools that they don't have anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason that Texas A&M has been a weird entry, Texas A&M and Missouri have been weird entries into the SEC since they came. They recruit players that don't necessarily fit the SEC style of play.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, Baylor, I mean, there's playing time. They played an insane amount of freshmen this year. Like, there's a reason they went 1-11. It's not because Matt Rule's a bad coach. No, it's just that they have almost no depth.
Mm-hmm.
Almost no depth. So, I mean, I don't know the lives of these young men. I'm just, those are what I would consider an explanation for the way it is.
Right. I mean, yeah, and to clarify, like, I don't know, it may have not been my decision just because of the reputation of course. They still have. But, again, I'm fully here for someone wanting to better their life and try to make it to the league and try to make it to the next level. And at the same time, getting an education for free,
yeah.
Which we both wish we were getting one for free.
Yeah, that would be nice. Other
more news here, Nebraska with Scott Frost coming in at 22.
Pretty
doing
good.
A good job.
Pretty
comparably
good.
Comparably better than the number 71 that UCF is at.
That national championship really helped you out with your recruiting.
Yeah, it did. It did. That parade was great. The t-shirts are nice, though. We've talked about it before.
We have talked about
the
t-shirts.
I want
really
one, my
good.
Friend.
They're clean.
I want one.
If y'all actually did win a national championship, would actually buy one.
Yeah. NC State, we talk about them a lot in the sense of they're a team that can beat anyone, but not everyone they're a team that can beat anyone on any given day, but not consistently.
They can't beat everybody.
Exactly.
But
it's nice to have them a strong.
They're building off success. Maryland is building off no success.
Yeah.
They went 4-8, I believe.
DJ Durkin making magic happen.
He's still making players come to that. He's locking down the borders in Maryland. I'm very impressed by that.
He is really, really, really successful in the DMV.
Yeah.
It's DC, Maryland, Virginia area. He is really locking down there. And I respect that. I respect that from him. I think in a few years, he may have this team doing some good things. I think
they had a weird season this
Maryland
year.
Maryland has, what, the third best recruiting class in the Big Ten? We talked about?
I believe it's like the third or the fourth.
Yeah.
Big Ten recruiting is weird. It's very weird. But yeah. I believe it's the third or the fourth. They had a weird season this year. They lost their top two quarterbacks in the first three games.
Yeah.
And they just were not. They're not built to withstand. Not most teams aren't built to withstand that.
Right.
But they just weren't built to withstand that. Mississippi State coming in at 27.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. I think Coach Joe Moorhead is going to do big things there. Personally, I think they made a really good hire with him.
I think they made a good hire as well.
He's literally the only downside that I could think of, and is that he's not a Mississippi guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the inroads of Mississippi recruiting are weird. There's so many JUCO schools there. It's a very locked down state. If the players don't go to one of the Mississippi schools, they go to LSU or Alabama if they're good enough.
Right.
That's generally what happens. And you have to know the state of Mississippi really, really well.
Right. And Dan Mullen is someone who learned it and took mm-hmm. time.
But that being said, as much as that's true, I think at the same time, you get on the phone and you call a recruit and say, I'm the head coach of Mississippi State, they're going to listen to you.
Yeah.
So, I'm impressed. I think he's going to do big things, personally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very surprised that the North Carolina had a top 25 recruit.
Yeah.
I'm astounded by
that. And I don't really know much about it, to be honest.
I know nothing about it.
That was quiet. I did not even know they were a top 25 school until we were reading them off.
I don't know. I mean,
all right. Well, overall, that's signing day for the most part.
There's a lot of other
other news.
Stories. What was it? Miami and Ohio was the worst of it. FBS recruiting, the worst recruiting job, 130th. I'm trying to find out what the worst Power 5 one. It was Duke at 61. No, it isn't.
No, you got. Okay, we're at.
I missed out. I'm wrong.
You are way off, dude.
Texas Tech is at
73. And we're still going down. Temple's at 8. Another American. I think we could say.
I think Texas Tech had the worst.
Texas Tech.
That sucks.
Which, to be honest, makes sense because in the recruiting ground that they're in.
It makes complete sense, but that sucks. For them.
Yeah, for them, exactly.
Yeah. Cliff Kingsbury just consistently does enough to stay alive at Texas State. Texas Tech.
He works with what he's got, man. He
consistently goes 6-6.
He works with what he's got, dude.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, so...
I think it's actually a relatively quiet overall national
Day. Yeah, I think a lot of it was taken away because of the opening of the second.
Of the early signing period?
Yeah.
While that is, and while that is disappointing, since I do think it is better for the players, I don't particularly care about it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's fine with me that National Signing Day is not as entertaining mm-hmm. as it used to be. But yeah, this is kind of the one moment. This is what's funny to me. Brevin White, that was his name.
Yeah, I was looking him up.
Princeton Tigers. BB, that was the quarterback who chose Princeton over Alabama. I'm never gonna get over that. But I think that I don't even know what I was saying. Sergio, what was I saying?
I don't know. I was looking up Brevin White.
I completely lost my train of thought.
I don't know, man. It's Monday. It's been a long day.
It is. Yeah.
We both got tons more to do. I think this is the moment where we wrap it up, Tyler. When we start forgetting the talking points is when we gotta start wrapping it
I'm
up.
I'm very tired. I know, dude.
I know.
All right. I guess that's recruiting. I mean, this is... I remember now, actually.
Okay, go ahead.
National Science Day is... The cool thing about it is, to me, it's the one moment that you know, and everybody knows, who's on the rosters for next year.
Yes.
Like, this is the finalized moment where it's like, for me, as much as the season ends on... the season ends with the national championship game. For me, this is really when the season ends. Mm-hmm. Or more importantly, this is when the 2018 season starts.
Yeah.
Because all the players that have a chance to play in that season mm-hmm. are now eligible for college football.
Yep.
And now all the shift moves on to the next recruiting class. Which, to me, personally, truly kind of goes to show that recruiting is the lifeblood of the program. A lifeblood of any program, which is why I need to be good at it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just think that that's how I look at signing day.
Yeah, my favorite thing about signing day is that, like you said, it's the beginning of the next year, and I think it's probably the biggest high that we have on college football until the spring games, which Florida Gator spring game is going to be Saturday, April 14th at 3 p.m. in the Swamp. Admission is free. If you're here, if you're around, come out, come watch the game.
Have you seen these other spring games at these other schools that literally charge money?
They do?
Yeah, Florida State is charging money.
What?
To go to the spring game.
I don't know.
Also, Vanilla Ice will be there.
Who?
Vanilla Ice will be there performing. Who? You know who I'm talking
about. I don't think
Ice, Ice Baby.
Ice who?
Shut up. Don't okay. think you know I can sing that in
Oh, song. you mean the one guy who the took Ninja. Off the Under Pressure.
Yeah, who ripped off Under Pressure?
Yeah.
He was a Ninja Turtle. He was a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 Secret of the Ooze.
I didn't even know that was a movie.
Yeah. The thing that pisses me off about that movie is that...
the fact that it's a second Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle?
No, it's not that. It's like the Secret of the Ooze. There's no secret. Like, there is no secret in the
Spoiler
movie.
Spoiler alert, there's no secret, guys.
Well, like, not only is like, oh, you never learned the secret. There's no secret. Everybody knows everything that there is to know about this ooze in the movie.
It so I don't have to watch cool. it. Is that what you're telling me?
I don't want to.
Going
to
watch it.
All right, fine. The first one was better anyway.
The point, of course.
It's the live action ones.
Yes, like, yeah. I've seen the first one.
But he was in that. Also, Nebraska.
Yeah.
Is now, their spring game is sold out. And I believe there are $500 tickets to go to the spring game.
What?
I'm sorry. I love spring games, but as unpopular opinion, I like spring games.
Oh, my Lord.
But never $500.
I love spring games because it's an insight as to what's going to happen next year. But
oh, my gosh.
$500?
I'm not joking when I say that.
Tyler, good Lord.
Yeah.
No, I can't.
I'd rather pay like $15 and go to Vanilla Ice.
For $500, I'm done with you. That's the end of the pod. This is spring game, Saturday, April 14th at 3 p.m. Come out. Tyler and I will be there. We'll have a live reaction podcast afterwards, just like we did with the Baylor against Florida basketball game. Same time next week. We'll see you guys. Until then, my name is Sergio.
My name is Tyler.
And we're not biased, but go Gators.